My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
And my name is Will Hughes, he, him.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast, and this is a very special episode, because you heard I am joined by my special guest, Will Hughes.
I've never been called special before, Gary, and I've never been given an award.
Well, stay tuned to the end of this episode when awards are popping.
Really? Finally? I always think about how I've never been given awards. Is that healthy?
Probably. It depends on when you think about it, if you're going to sleep.
Gary, is this awake. The longest a WAF episode has gone without saying what the game is?
Yeah, it's dumb. We got to stop.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's get in. No. Don't apologize. I was doing it. This is an episode of Watch Out for Fireballs, a very special episode. And this is about the Binding of Isaac. And the reason why we are being jagoffs is because Will and I have a show about that where we're super goofy. And we're in that mode.
Yeah, we're also just kind of goofballs. But yeah, I'm very excited to talk with Isaac. Talk with Isaac about you, Gary. That's what's going on here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Abram. Huge thanks to Abram. And thank you for appreciating the format shift. It would be, Kay has played this game, but you and I have played it for thousands of hours. Before we get into that, though, how might people know you?
Yeah, I mean, people listening to this probably know me from Everything to Guppy here on the Duckfeed Podcasting Network, regularly referred to as the worst show on the network, and I say that with pride. Beyond that, I am a staff writer at the AV Club. I write about games, I write about TV, I write about news, I write about basically everything.
Yeah, doing Fallout recaps. I'm looking forward to reading once I catch up.
Yeah. Get to look at Kumail.
I love looking at Kumail. Especially now that he's hot. So Everything to Guppy is an improv show that ostensibly talks about the video game The Binding of Isaac, but doesn't really. And the cool thing about this episode is we're going to actually talk about it as a game.
Yeah, I made this point on a recent episode, but if you could filter out all the bullshit, it is, I think, the most definitive document about Isaac that exists, but it's a lot of bullshit to filter out. It's
by volume, it's like 99% just whatever.
It's months of bullshit to filter out.
For every 5 minutes of juicy analysis of the video game, and I think there's reasons why the video game kind of fades in the background for us as something that we can just kind of inherently know and talk about anything and use as kind of a guide, because it's kind of, you know, it's so elemental. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Before we get into it, though, the format for this will be a little bit different. As you have probably already guessed, I don't know how Kay does her solo episodes or guest episodes rather, but this will be a little bit like the Split Fiction episode. This is gonna be more topics about the game, in part because I think that's more interesting, and in part because going through every boss and item and character in this would take an eternity if we did this in a traditional WAF structure.
It's so fucking brutal for you to just casually admit you don't listen to Kay's solo episodes.
Kay's only done one of them, and I haven't listened to it because it's about Majora's Mask. I know everything there is to know about Majora's Mask. Cool concept, bad to play. So we're going to go into it, but I got a series of topics here. Anything else you can think of before we get into it, buddy?
No, I'm just excited to talk about this video game that I have played a couple of times.
Yeah, it's a pretty good Enter the Gungeon like. That's a joke.
Yeah, this is a relatively good Dead Cells ripoff.
Yeah, Dead Cells alike, or like a Wizard's Lizard alike, you know?
If you took the Rogue Prince of Persia and really just rejiggered a couple things.
Yeah, it's basically this. No, of course not. We're not going to get into a full development of this, though, because it's really ongoing. This is one of the more shifting developments, I feel like, in games for a single-player game. This has had constant additions. So the very basics of it, designed and developed by Edmund McMillan in 2011 and Florian Himsel. They did a week-long game jam that was a game inspired by The Legend of Zelda, was the concept.
Yeah, and in terms of historical context, at this point, McMillan had already made Super Meat Boy and had, in the parlance of the times, made his nut.
Yes, as seen in Indie Game the Movie.
Yeah.
There. Edmund McMillan, we're going to talk about this, is a developer that I think we both have some affection for his previous games as well. Mm-hmm. I'm slightly less of a Meat Boy head because I'm not a punishing platformer guy, but I like Gish and Time Fuck and... you know, the other ones I'd played.
Yeah, I love the original Meat Boy. I do not like, I don't remember what the new one, new-ish one is. Don't care for it. The one where you auto run?
Yeah, not the 3D one that's coming out, actually. That's kind of weird.
That also, I didn't even know about that. That sounds very weird.
It's weird. It's a different developer. But
I have interviewed McMillan before. He's like a soft-spoken, nice guy, but he is, you can tell, he is very... divorced from his success in a way that makes it clear that he mostly just thinks about his own problems as a developer and like his own problems with his lore and stuff, and is not like, oh, this is Isaac. It will. And this is a good trait, I think, for a developer to have in a lot of ways, is does not think about Isaac as this like monolith that everyone knows is going to work.
Yes. Even though it undeniably is, which is part of the reason why I was excited to do this episode.
Yeah.
Like, crazy successful and important. Started just as Flash, as a Flash game. Eventually, Nicalis, their publisher, came on and brought it out of the Flash shadows. This came out as The Binding of Isaac Rebirth, 2014, and it's on everything. Major consoles at the time.
Yeah.
As, you know, PS4, Switch, 3DS, the Wii U. If you want to play it on Wii U, you can.
Hell yeah. Get rid of Adventureland for a day and go play.
I'm so sick of playing the one exclusive Mario game that is no longer exclusive on there.
Yeah, there's probably a Red Steel on there, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah. It's also the really bad, weird 3DS port. A funny thing about all these ports is they get abandoned.
Yes.
So they end up in past versions forever.
The infamously buggy and crash-prone 3DS version.
Yeah, does not work. This game, critically acclaimed, sold really, really well. And it's one of the most, as I mentioned, one of the most supported games. There have been 5 big expansion updates. So Wrath of the Lamb, Rebirth, Afterbirth, Afterbirth Plus, and Repentance. A lot of in-depth fan works. And then a lot of like just minor balance changing for things that is happening to this day. Things like that have happened recently.
Yeah, I find this game really interesting to think about in terms of the games as service trend that developed, that didn't come along for about another probably 6 or 7 years after this came out.
Yes.
This is much more in the vein of how Valve originally treated Team Fortress 2, which now you can look at and see, oh, that's where games as service got a lot of its start. It's like, we've released our shooter, now we're updating and tweaking it. This obviously is a single-player game, which is... it is now, I think, both because of the online era, but also specifically because of Isaac, that at least some of this kind of aftercare is now expected, which is, I imagine, horribly onerous for developers.
Yeah, probably pretty annoying for everyone. And it's worth... this is something that kind of relates to something later, but something I thought of today while eating breakfast. Classic breakfast thought.
Hell yeah, breakfast thoughts. What were you having for breakfast, Gary?
It's not just my favorite magazine, Breakfast Thoughts.
Gary, before you give me your thought, you have to give me your breakfast.
Oh, it was low-carb cereal, Factor cereal.
Factor? How's Factor taste?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I bet you if I wasn't used to it, it would taste like newspaper, but like,
sure.
You know, I have really lowered my expectations for foods and flavors.
Is it salty?
No.
That's the thing about, you ever try grape nuts?
Yeah.
The saltiest of cereals.
It's really salty. You could put it on another food. You can encrust a chicken with it. So the way that this is updated, though, something I think is interesting and cool is when I think about a game that is constantly balanced, generally that's for multiplayer, you know?
Yeah.
And that means it is largely about taking things away from the player. It's almost always nerfs. Like they realize, you know, if you look at the string of, say, Elden Ring updates, there are a couple buffs in there, but it's almost entirely like this item was too good. It was ruining the meta.
Yeah.
The Binding of Isaac doesn't do that, though. It has a really different approach to balance, which always moves towards fun. Sometimes if something is overpowered, it will get nerfed, but only if it's in a not fun way. And for the most part, things just get updated to either work together or be viable.
I have a couple examples of that I want to give, but I think we should, I'll say it after we've kind of like laid down the basics of the game, because it makes more sense then. But
absolutely. Yeah. If you're not familiar at all, it's a cool thing. I've been playing it this last week.
I've played more Isaac this week than I've played in a while.
Remains great. And a bunch of items that I was like, oh, this item is dog shit, actually sneakily overnight became good. Invalidating our entire podcast, everything.
To Guppy. This is actually where we're going to announce that once we finish what we're doing on Everything to Guppy, we will be doing a pivot where we go back through every item and talk about how it's been updated. That's the plan for Everything to Guppy going forward.
That is the pivot. This game, hugely important, responsible, like at least in part, but largely for the rise of roguelikes. This was an early big one. Those are dominant right now. Mm-hmm. They've been dominant for a really long time. I would make the argument that The Binding of Isaac, because of that influence, even if it doesn't have the reach, is quietly one of the most important games of like the last, you know, 20 years. Just did a lot.
Yeah. And Gary, how do you feel about drawing a distinction between roguelike and roguelite?
Yeah, I should have been saying roguelite there.
It's hard to say, as just demonstrated.
Yeah, I feel ambivalent because I fucked it up. But good point, though, because we are on WoW. It is a roguelite. What that means, the difference, if you're listening to this, you don't know, roguelike plays like the original game Rogue. A roguelite just takes some elements from it.
Isaac takes more from, is more similar to Rogue than a lot of games like this, mostly in its embrace of randomness.
Yes. Yeah, very much. Like, there are direct analogs.
I was thinking about this today, in thinking about like the descendants of Isaac. Very few of them have embraced randomness the way this game does. This game, as a regular kind of status effect it will give you, is not knowing what the item you're about to pick up is.
Yeah. Yeah. Hiding information, things like that are in the spirit of old Rogue, but in the world of new Rogue, design has gotten tighter and less along with that. Contrast with like Hades, which is huge hit, not interested in randomness. Even within the elements that are random, there is a pretty tight spread.
Yeah.
You can kind of wild out, but it will funnel you onto a build. Once you, you know, have chosen a god, a set of boons, you will continue to get that god's boons. You are funneled into something not random, kind of from the beginning of that. It's degrees. Obviously, it is random. This is very random.
It's extremely random, and random as taken as a design good.
Yes. It does not feel bad, at least to me. We'll get into this more when we talk about the experience of playing it, but I don't feel fucked by the randomness in this game. Sometimes you will just get a real bad seed, but that is balanced out, and you do have the proper amount of amelioration you can do with skill in this, I think.
Talking about this in its position in the history of roguelites, I think it's basically this and Spelunky, I think, that you add together to make what we have now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a lot about the concept of the forever game, which now is like, again, it's so weird that this like touches on games as service a bunch for me, because this is a game I have played probably 1500, maybe 2000 hours of. This is the game I think I've probably played more than any other game in my life. Decent chance.
Yeah. And for me, I hate games of service. And this does several of the same things, but it works.
Yeah. Partly because it's just not interested in it. It has multiplayer eventually, but is not interested in multiplayer as like a competitive multiplayer as an idea.
Yeah. And even the cooperative multiplayer, I would say, while fun, is not the most developed mode.
Yeah, it's secondary. This.
Yeah, it's kind of an afterthought. Yeah. If you're listening to this, you don't even know what kind of game this is. The Binding of Isaac is a twin stick shooter. Roguelite, inspired by The Legend of Zelda, as we mentioned. You're a little guy. We'll talk about that little guy, your little baby. You clear rooms, go from room to room. These are randomly pulled from a pool of rooms. There are thousands and thousands of them. I'm still seeing new ones. You fight enemies in the rooms. You get item drops. You get items, both passive and active. You fight a boss at the end of each floor. And you go down unlocking characters, eventually secrets and floors and alternate paths to like super bosses through this.
And I want to camp out on that very first point because it's a very simple gameplay conceit. The twin stick shooter, right? It's two directional inputs. We've been doing it. Robotron came out in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
It is about as simple as a video game gets. And that's super important to what is good about Isaac because the more simple the gameplay is, the more mutable it is.
I that's true. It's super simple by current standards. I would say by like the time Robotron is actually pretty complicated.
Sure.
Like to like a Pac-Man or what have you. Like,
sure.
You have positioning. You have to like lead your shots. So like that Robotron fucks. Like I love that game.
Gary, I got on here just to basically talk shit about Robotron. It sucks and I hate it. And it doesn't scare me when the flashing lights.
When Evil Auto makes the noise.
Evil Auto is from Berserk.
I know. Okay, okay, good. Yeah, good catch.
What was that? What was that?
God, huh? I was trying to catch you.
Why?
Because I over the course of like a decade and a half, you and Kay correcting me on this show has become a weird kind of kink or something. Okay. I don't like it, but it happens. And I like it catching out people when they're wrong, or if you correct me on something I'm right on, it feels good just because it makes up for all those thousands of times you both corrected me on stuff.
But you weren't right in this case. You said a wrong thing on purpose so that I would correct you.
No, so I wanted to see if you would, and then if you didn't, I was going to get you.
That's really fucked, dude.
I know. Well, I'm a complicated game mechanic. I'm complicated. I could not make a good Isaac.
All right. So returning to the point I was sort of kind of attempting to make.
Mm-hmm.
The basic simplicity of a twin stick shooter means you don't have to worry about things like physics. You don't really have to worry about animations. You don't have to worry about a lot of things that would get in the way of fucking with those mechanics.
Yeah. There's enemy hurt boxes. There's your hurt box and there are bullets.
Yeah.
Basically. And these things are going to move around, but nobody is like doing a move. Every once in a while they have a small tell and things, but it's not very important to the actual play. The play is very simple through this.
And that simplicity means that, like, if you want to, like, take your gun, which in the case of Isaac, and we'll get into the theming in a minute, but it's tears. You're crying at your enemies.
Yes.
If you want to take that gun and turn it into a giant screen-clearing laser, or you want to take that gun and take all of your tears and put them in a little pellet, and now you move the pellet around to hurt enemies, or... Mm-hmm. If you want to make the shots loop around the screen or bounce off of everything or turn into grenades that explode, you can do all this shit because you have such a base substrate that you can play with. And that's where the fun is.
It's all the elements too. Like we talk about how there's three elements. There's Isaac, enemy, and bullet in this basically for the most part. And then like geometry.
Yeah, navigational. But
all of those elements can be changed. So not only can you change your bullet as a thing, you can change enemy bullets. You can change Isaac, in size in a way that matters, in qualities. You have items that will just change
where your
enemies.
Hitbox is. You can move your hitbox out of your body.
Yeah, out of your body or make it so small as to where you can move through elements of geometry. It is a protean game because the items you receive are randomized through this. And what that means is, every run in this is different in a way that roguelites don't always do. I looked online to see like how many different combinations there were. And this is before Repentance. There was something like 2 to the 547th power
yeah,
number of combinations. It's like Stars in the Sky shit. And Repentance was huge. You will not have the same run again, and you will not on all those different axes. So it's very rare that you will have the same weapon, be the same person, fight the same enemies, or deal with the same land, run to run, ultimately.
Yeah. The variance of Isaac is one of the things that makes it special. It is one of the things no imitator has managed to match.
Yes. Or be, I wonder if they're interested in it, right? That's something that I wanted to camp out on at some point during this discussion, because it does feel like there haven't been a lot of attempts at that specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is just having the install base and the scope and having the time for it, I'm sure. But also, as we mentioned before, talking about like Hades and such, the trend has moved away from that.
Yeah. Or even the game I think about a lot in the context of someone trying to make their own version of Isaac that is pursuing their own values is Enter the Gungeon.
Yeah.
Gungeon is a game about shooting.
Yes. It takes that kind of dual stick thing, but it is a much, again, like a tighter designed thing. And I love Gungeon. It
is
Gungeon.
A better game about shooting than Isaac is, for sure. Yes.
We'll talk about that at some point, too. Like, the base mechanics of this are not the tightest thing in the world.
No. They're like, I was imagining a version of Isaac where you got no items, which I think there's certainly a challenge that does something like that somewhere buried in this game.
There is.
Because this game is so huge. But it's not fun. It's not.
It's horrible.
It's fun for like a minute. Like I can think back to when I first played this in 2011 and like the basic twin stick controls, they're okay. And it's kind of at that point, you're still like dipping into the aesthetics, but playing through this before you get items is a tax you are paying, because it's not a super fun game without that stuff.
To be clear, you always start with some items.
Yeah,
but before you unlock more of them, a lot of the rhythm of this game and the kind of the journey is unlocking stuff. Hundreds and hundreds of things you unlock. But yeah, it's not as fun, partly because every encounter at that point boils down to endurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's attrition because enemies scale up as if you're going to get items. So they take a million hits. And it can be fun to dodge things, but it's not like Gungeon where I feel like a no-hit run is reasonable. In Isaac, it's not that tightly designed. Like, you can do it, it's possible, but it's not a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, in terms of like its very specific tuning as a twin stick shooter, it is not as concerned with not getting hit as a lot of games in that space. There's a lot of ways to recover from taking a hit.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that. That's one of the things that if you go back and if you're a Duck Feed old head and you listen to Check It Out Comrade, both me and Nick, when we first covered Gungeon, which was in early access, there was only one boss on the first floor, had a major problem with Gungeon because
it's
of that.
Super punishing in that regard.
And that has also been a trend. If you look at roguelikes, the idea that, no, like you're not really going to be able to recover. You have to do, you know, I think about haven't played Hades 2 yet, but I think about Hades 1. Mm-hmm. And there is some, you can recover health from time to time, you find a room that does it, et cetera, et cetera. It's rare.
What you are aiming to do in games like that is make a build where you will not take any damage in most rooms.
And that is not necessarily true in Isaac. And again, it was really early, it just kind of didn't start a trend. One of the other things, as we mentioned, that differentiates this from similar games, not all other games, but some, is this idea of synergy here.
Yeah.
Items in this almost always interact with one another. That doesn't happen a lot in these games.
I will say now.
Yeah.
In base. Now. So like talking about the development, one of the reasons that there are two different EXEs you can buy for this game, the original Isaac and then The Binding of Isaac Rebirth, which came out in 2014, is the original Isaac was programmed in Flash. There were reportedly hard limitations on how much of this playing together and how much like of this mutability we're talking about Flash could support.
Yes. I was there. Like I played through with that and there were some things.
There were a couple things. Like there were like, did they have Brimstone and Mom's Knife interact?
Yeah.
Properly well,
no, not okay. interact. They just had them separately.
Yeah.
But it would be things to the degree when you had lasers, tiers, mm-hmm. we had tech and shot lasers, the more damage you got, the bigger it got. So you would get damage ups and it would affect it, but it would affect it in terms of making it really wide and have a bigger hurt box. So there were minor synergies like that.
And yeah, hey, listener, if you are hearing any of these item names, you're like, what does that item do? We're not going to tell you in this episode unless it's really germane, but there's a whole podcast you can listen to where at some point we will say what the item is before talking about our penises.
Yes. But there were really minor versions. They really couldn't do that. The Flash version of Isaac worked because it felt really new. At the time, I played the shit out of the Flash version of Isaac.
Yeah, same. I've got like 600, 800 hours in it.
Yeah, just, you know, really compulsive play loop. However, adding these synergies, I think, is the secret sauce to it that they've added. Not only have they did they initially add with Rebirth, but have added with every major update, additional ones. Will, what do we mean by synergy?
We mean that items will modify, at the bare minimum, items won't invalidate each other, which is a problem that what did happen in the Flash Isaac sometimes. If you had two powerful effects that both affected your tiers, sometimes one would just turn the other off.
Yes.
That almost never happens in modern Isaac. And increasingly, this is a thing they have gone into and gone back and changed. Lots of times, they will combine in some way where they make each other stronger, or they combine in ways that make sense. Sometimes this is like a whole new effect or aesthetic. Most of the time, it's just them playing well with each other in some way. Like, if I have poison tears and I have the tears that cause it me to like horf up a bunch of tears at once, all of those can have the poison, and they'll have like the poison visuals on them, things like that.
Yeah. And it works on passive things as well. So like another example of active, a really useful one, is you can get homing tiers.
Yeah.
They'll home in. If your tier changes into something else, it will still home.
Yeah. And this is like maybe that sounds simplistic, but like there's a lot of work into that. Like there are items you can get that turn your tiers from projectiles into hit scan lasers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the coolest like one of those moments where you're like, oh man, they're really doing their job here, is if the first time you get lasers and homing and you watch the laser like bend and arc around the screen to hit stuff.
Yeah.
It making looks a beautiful cool, spirograph. Feels incredible.
Yeah. It's really, really good. That kind of feeling of like, oh, you've broken it is one of the best feelings in games. And I think Isaac is kind of singular in delivering this flavor of it. What's really cool though, like, so those are synergies where two effects make sense together. There are also synergies that are a cool third thing. For example, if you get you can get an item where when you touch an enemy, they turn into poop. We'll talk about the aesthetic. You can also get an item where if you turn an enemy, they turn into gold. If you have both of them, they'll turn into golden poop, which you can then destroy for money. There are a lot of things like that as well. You can get a thing where you have a cloud following you, like this depression cloud. That you have, and you can have poison tears. The depression cloud rains. It will rain down poison. It'll rain down all the effects. Or if somebody's in it and you have the thing that makes beams come down from heaven, that can happen because it's a cloud. Like shit like that. There are some of them that are more creative than just two bullet effects on top of each other, because like you see that in Borderlands and shit. It's real different in this, but that's closer to how Gungeon does it, where they become like a weird third thing.
Those are very specific combinations that come together to make a third thing.
Most things work together in this.
And where they have tweaked the game, it is often a lot of like the design philosophy of this game is someone said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if these work together?
Yes. That moving towards fun.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to balance kind of thing, as we talked about. This is, as we mentioned, a forever game. You can like throw 20 hours at this and have a good time. I've known people who have done that. I think Kay's done that and stuff. But if you're a pervert and this gameplay loop and kind of unlock loop appeals to you, this will get into your soul. This will burrow into your brain like a virus. It's worth talking about the unlock loop as well here, because it is different than a checklist of things. You are unlocking a wider possibility space, sometimes a wildly different possibility space. Unlocking a new character or a new path or new floor is huge.
Yeah.
Unlocking a new character unlocks a whole suite of items that you can unlock. And that changes that the swinginess of that dice roll, of that protean form you're going to take at the end of a run. That's appealing intrinsic and extrinsic. You're not only doing a checklist like you might be doing in like a Vampire Survivors, but mm-hmm. you are also making a wider play box every time you unlock something in this.
And this meta progression is one of those things that is foundational to the mm-hmm. roguelite genre.
Mm-hmm.
That Isaac, you know, it's, you know, you say first, who knows, popularized.
Yes.
And again, the things that you are unlocking, because the first like 10 runs through this game, you're just unlocking, like it's kind of introducing you to this idea where you beat the boss, you unlock one new item, the game pops up, an achievement says, hey, new item. These yep. items are not automatically better than what you had.
Yeah.
They are usually more complex.
Exactly. It's got a kind of a Magic the Gathering arc like that. And sometimes they are worse, but more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You will unlock stuff that is dog shit. It's also worth telling you that as the base game, this does not tell you what the item does. You can now turn that on, mm-hmm. But you couldn't originally.
Previously, you had to listen to everything to Guppy on the DuckFeed Network to hear what the item did.
It was hard for us because we had to make it first and then listen to it.
Yeah, no. And we're guessing a lot of the times. And also, again, most of the descriptions now are inaccurate.
Yeah, we're using a wiki and those guys don't know what they're doing. you would unlock a thing. It would just tell you the name of it. Sometimes you can infer what it might do, but you'd have to pick it up. That joy of discovery was integral to this being a brainworm game for me. What else on this kind of how it plays?
So yeah, I this isn't in the notes, but I think it's worth talking specifically about the very smallest loop in the game, which is a floor.
Yes.
So at the start of every floor of Isaac, you are dropped into a room that doesn't have enemies in it usually. Mm-hmm. You have a map that is set up basically like the dungeons from the original Legend of Zelda. Rooms are roughly rectangular, although later versions have added in different shapes for rooms to be.
Yep, always right angles. But yeah. Yeah.
You enter a room, you must, to leave the room, most of the time you must kill all the enemies. Sometimes there's a navigation challenge,
mm-hmm.
Where you have to hit a button instead to clear. Usually you're avoiding things like spikes or other kinds of traps.
There are also rooms that don't have any enemies in them.
Yeah.
There are rare Easter egg rooms, that pop up, and there are rooms that are just there for vibe.
And as Gary said, the rooms are, they feel randomly generated. They are not. There's just a huge pool of them that the game can pull from.
Yes.
Each floor has its own room pull and aesthetics. So you start in a basement and then go down deeper into the earth.
Yep. With an enemy palette as well that scales up with difficulty as you go deeper.
Most enemies have a value that increases their health the further down you are, and also enemies get more complicated the further down you are.
Yep. And on this floor, what you're doing is you got to make your way to the boss. On each floor, there is an item room and a shop.
Mm-hmm.
On the first floor, they very gracefully allow them to be unlocked. But you go in there and you want to get your item, you know, so you start getting some DPS upgrades or some upgrades, you fight the boss for an upgrade. As you make your way through, in addition to clearing rooms by killing enemies, there are secrets and resources you're going to get mm-hmm. Throughout these. There's a secret room on every floor. There's a second secret room on every floor. And then there are special rooms that can roll up.
Three basic resources, or I guess four basic resources you're managing in this game. Health, which as we said, is pretty abundant and comes in a couple different forms, either regular HP that goes into Zelda style heart containers or various forms of temporary HP that you don't have a way to replenish normally.
Mm-hmm.
You have coins, which interact primarily with the shops, but also some other mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
There are bombs, which is probably the clearest like Zelda nod in the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
That are used to clear obstacles. They can be used as weapons. They're one of the places that the game can modify extensively with items. And then there are keys, which, as the name suggests, are entirely about removing roadblocks to various things you want.
Yep. And these will drop randomly either from enemies or at the end of a room. And sometimes they're in chest, things like that. You're kind of gathering and managing these resources as you go, trading those micro resources for macro resources for items.
Yeah,
through this, to craft a build as you move through these different floors, go deeper, face additional challenges, you become something unlike what you started as. And it's, I just don't know where else to put this, so I'm going to say it right now. Mm-hmm. You change your appearance as well.
Yeah.
Your Isaac tells the story of what happened to you and what you were at the end by how he looks.
Yeah, almost every item in the game has some sort of cosmetic effect on Isaac or whatever. There's many characters in this, but we usually just refer to them as Isaac. It has some cosmetic effect on their appearance, usually damaging or deforming. Which, again, we'll talk about the aesthetics.
Aesthetics and story stuff. Yeah, just hold your pants up. Yeah, so that kind of element of arcade gameplay when you're in a room, a strategy level where you are managing resources, and a build craft kind of drafting model almost as you craft a character build as you go through. It is the combination of these things that is the secret sauce. I will say one of the reasons, not fighting Pokemon, but one reason why Spelunky doesn't work for me is because to me, I don't feel that as much. The strategy layer and build craft layer doesn't come through as much.
Absolutely. It's not there. It is where, like, you know, Spelunky is foundational because of its level generation primarily, mm-hmm. And the tightness of its play.
Yes. Isaac is not just that. You can be good at Isaac. The actual, you know, as a dexterity game, there you have power. Mm-hmm. Is not completely, you know, up to random chance, but it's a little bit less emphasized through there. And that kind of adds that secret sauce of the really, really wide amount of swinginess, actually getting all three cherries on the slot machine on the first pull from time to time, mm-hmm. and feeling very empowered. It also means that for me, as I'm playing, I'm thinking about something other than just moving my dude around.
Isaac is a very good game for the idea that a good game is one about interesting decisions.
Yes. Which, yeah, something that I've been saying forever on WoW. Like, I feel like it's the most important thing to me in games. I want to express myself and make cool decisions and make my own little version of a guy.
Notably, at the start of your game, resources are very tight. Bombs and keys, usually by the end of a run, you're running with like 20 to 30 bombs and keys each.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, you are making real decisions about, do I spend a key here to open a chest that might have two keys in it, or God help me, an item.
Mm-hmm. Or it might have half a heart I don't need.
Yeah.
You know, again,
or do I save that key to open a treasure room on the next floor? I have bombs. Do I use those bombs to go hunting for secret rooms because I sort of know the logic by which they're put on the map? Or do I blow up this rock that has an X on it that'll get me a nice little resource right now?
Yes. Constantly. And that, I think that is a turnoff for some folk, that kind of fatigue. It's Gary Nip. Mm-hmm. I love being in that. And as you introduce, we'll talk about the D6. We're not going to talk about individual items very much.
Sure.
But we will talk about the D6. It is introduces a different dimension to that play that I think is really important.
I'm not going to sit here and say I've never played Isaac without thinking about what I'm doing, but that's mostly a function of the amount of time I've put into it. I played a bunch of it this week. You are thinking about your choices all the time in this game.
In a way, but once you've done it for so long, you kind of just go automatic.
Sure.
At that point. And that has a lot of pleasure as well. Like, I'm still making the same choices and doing the same things. I don't have to stop and think about it because I have an institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
That I've built up that is satisfying to rely on. The D6, there's a thing that happens in this game as you play it. With your character, you will eventually unlock an item that Isaac will start with.
Mm-hmm.
It's a D6 dice, and it's one of the best power-ups in games.
Yeah, specifically Isaac the character, the base character that you start playing the game as.
It allows you to reroll an item. It has a charge. It goes through. It charges every room. Like, there are active items. You have to clear rooms to charge them up. But it means that when you are getting to an item, you can see something that would be fine, but you can always do the Monty Hall thing. You could always risk it for the goat. You know, I think he gave away a goat, right?
There's no way to know, Gary. Are you talking about something that happened in the past? Are you talking about Wayne Brady?
No. I was talking about the old Let's Make a Deal.
Yeah, Wayne Brady's Let's Make a Deal.
Okay, I didn't know he had done a reboot.
Yeah, they took all those Who's Line guys and put them into the modern game shows.
They kind of did. It's weird.
Where's
it's like
Greg
a retirement
Proops
community
game
for them.
Show?
Yeah, imagine. Fucking imagine subjecting yourself to that. Greg Poops.
Whoa, Gary, we're not talking about the aesthetics yet.
Yeah, The Binding of Greg. This idea that you, every time you're confronted with a power-up, you have to decide, do I want this or do I want to risk it for something better?
Mm-hmm.
Here. And then you're thinking, if I risk it for something better and I get something I can't use, do I have a way to try that again? Do I have enough rooms to recharge my D6 or do I have a battery? Which is an item you can buy to recharge your item. Can I do that? Do I need to save my reroll while I take this subpar item because I want to save my reroll for a higher value room later that I can get? Like a deal with the devil room for those in the know. It's a lot to explain, but it is a big part of the meta.
Yeah, so it is randomness that you get ways to adjust.
Yes, and it adds this element of like buildcraft to it as well. To play Isaac successfully, it's not only a matter of reflex and institutional knowledge. There is just a strategy layer of like making smart choices, making smart gambles. They are gambles. It is random, but you need to make smart gambles. And that is sick to me.
Yeah. It's part of what makes the game so compelling because again, you can't quite just go completely mindless with it.
No. But you can, if you play it enough, you can kind of go into this little middle state where you can listen to a podcast and play it, but you're still being engaged to the degree that I want to be engaged.
Gary, do you want to say flow state just so you're on the record saying flow state?
Flow state.
Flow state.
I get into a flow state. Another thing that I really like about this is the fact that it has been, since it's been in development for so long, there's such a huge possibility space in enemies and bosses as well.
Yeah.
They've done things that feel like they break the game a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They have been around long enough to set up the rules and break them, and getting a new boss for the most part is genuinely exciting because it's going to do something new.
Yeah. That's one. Yeah. As you're saying, Gary, one of the things that I really love about this game is not every enemy necessarily, although if you'd like to hear about every single enemy in The Binding of Isaac, I do have a podcast for you. But every boss has a concept.
Yes.
Like a really clear concept that is like easy. Like, you know, whether it's playing with the asteroids idea, whether it is kind of a static big thing that is throwing out bullet hell patterns,
mm-hmm.
Whether it is a little highly mobile guy, things like that. There are very clear concepts to every boss fight in this game. And again, the bosses are randomized and set to the floor that you're on.
And they've made so many. Mm-hmm. So they have their kind of set of concepts that you might think of, and then they've had to keep coming back for more and have just done neat ass shit with all of them. One of the things that's interesting about the experience of playing this game, we talked about, or you had mentioned specifically, how when you first start, it's a different game because you don't have a lot of stuff unlocked.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's obviously intentional. And one of the reasons why is because this can overwhelm. Mm-hmm. If you started with everything, you would just be like, I don't know what anything fucking does. It would feel bad. You need to be onboarded onto it, which makes, I think, starting The Binding of Isaac in, 2026, when everything is available to unlock, a little bit strange for people.
Yeah.
I think that you and I came up on it in the ideal way to come up on Isaac. And a lot of the big Isaac heads, like people who got famous streaming this and everything, came up the same way, kind of, adjusting to the boiling water at the proper frog's pace.
Yeah, which I do think it's worth talking for a second about difficulty.
Yes. Yeah.
Isaac there is a measure of customization you can do here in terms of which expansion packs you buy.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I think if I was telling someone how to get into Isaac now, I would tell them buy Rebirth, play Rebirth for a month.
Yeah.
Then buy Afterbirth and Afterbirth Plus. play that for a month, then buy Repentance. Yeah. Those are the four expansions, or those are the four versions of the Rebirth version of Isaac.
And yeah, that will set you up. You cannot just jump in here because it will be too hard. It can be a challenging game. What's interesting is that when this came out, this was known for being very challenging.
Yeah.
The challenging arms race has moved on from this.
Yeah, Isaac was harder, I think, in a lot of ways than Rebirth was at launch.
But, and largely for bad ways, too. Like, yeah. It was a lot of bad hitboxes and shit. Not a lot, but enough.
The main reason I say that about the expansions is because they add in alternate versions of floors that unlock pretty quick into a save file.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those are harder than the base versions.
Yes.
With more complicated enemies that are doing weirder patterns, a lot more things that involve like enemies spawning or more predictable or unpredictable enemy movements.
Mm-hmm.
So the game is tough. Like, I was playing it, I had runs that just died this week after 2,000 hours of playing it.
Yeah. You can still lose. I feel like it is comparably less tough to a lot of roguelites that have come out since.
Yeah, mostly because of that health that we're talking about. Although yes. Health in this gets a lot more scarce the further down you go.
Well, that plays into another really cool thing about this, that even when you're playing the game, you're choosing difficulty dynamically. You not only have these random elements, but you're choosing which path. You talked about those alt paths. If you would like additional challenge, or you want to unlock things down that route, or you just want to see those bosses, you can give yourself more challenge. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to do that, you can give yourself less. And you can do this not only through just, you know, the random chance, like the build craft you're doing and those strategy choices, it's also through character select and what choices you make during a run through this. So this game within it contains a wide swath of difficulty.
In addition to having straight up a difficulty selector that changes, there's a normal mode and a hard mode where worse enemies spawn and resources are more scarce, basically.
In addition to a bunch of challenges.
Yes.
You know, that's just kind of an extra mode for this. Before anything else on the base game of playing, I want to talk about those extra modes mm-hmm. before we move on. But do we have anything else with this, the experience of playing this?
No, I think we've mostly covered it.
Yeah, I think so too. There are extra modes in this. There are challenge modes that give you gimmicks. The fun of this is that they do feel like they're breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times, one of a frequent thing is you'll have a blindfold on, which means you cannot shoot tears. You get stuck with a different way to do damage.
Yeah.
And you have to make your way to a certain goal with that. These eventually get less interesting to me as sure. they go. Like, early on, it was real cool. Some of these are obnoxious now, but they were fun at the time. And again, felt pretty fresh. And then my specific baby that they stopped updating.
Can I talk about that mode for 1 second before we go?
Please.
Yeah. Part of what they are doing, so some of these are just explicit rule breaks. They genuinely change the rules of how the game works. Mm-hmm. Some of them are just tutorials.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they are showing you, hey, look what this combination of items that we've given you does.
If you haven't rolled in the wild.
Yeah. I'm on the same page with you that most, like, the later challenges are not as interesting to me. But there is a lot of like, hey, I rolled this randomly, I thought it was cool, now you can play with it. Speaking of, every game of Isaac has a seed that is generated for you, and people can share seeds if you're so inclined. You don't get any meta progress when you do that, but if you just want to like play a broken run, you can go get a seed that lets you do that.
You can do the opposite as well. Like, somebody says, can say, this seed is unbeatable,
you know,
and you can take on that challenge for it.
I'm always saying that when I'm down at the nursery.
As we mentioned, there's kind of these tutorial challenges. There are characters that kind of function as such as well. When you unlock a character, it is kind of teaching you a play style. Mm-hmm. And you have to dip into that. For at least the initial unlocks, you have to dip into that play style to get it, which is really interesting. So, for example, one of the first characters you'll unlock is Kane. Kane is a thief style character and has key synergies. In some ways, in addition to kind of other randomness synergies, you unlock him by getting a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's saying, hey, this character starts with a key. You can utilize the shops a little bit more. You have better luck. You're going to get better drops to utilize the shops. So if you dip your toe in that, it'll give you a character that says, play this way. And that is a a viable option for all the characters.
We talked past this. You do have explicit stats in this game.
Yes.
Damage stats, speed, how quickly you fire your tears, a nebulous luck stat that affects a mm-hmm. bunch of little things.
And then this game is powerful enough to have two absolutely shit dump stats mm-hmm. in this. They're very funny. Range, which you only kind of need, and then shot speed, which very hard to care about. But they're in there. Just, you know, so you can sometimes get those bad rolls.
So a character, in terms of play, what they are as a playset is a set of starting stats, including starting health, which is usually really critical. Starting resources, which again, that first floor, having a key or not is weirdly important.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of them start with an item. Some of the later ones have modifications to how they fight. Like they are straight up different in terms of what their like weaponry is and things like that. And then they have a set of unlocks that are tied to them and usually are pretty nestled together in theming.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, as you beat different versions of the final boss, different final bosses, because this game has several, as Kane, you will get more items that generate money or do thiefy kind of things.
Yeah. It's very of a piece. The characters are strong kind of theses on ways to play the game. And then finally, just as a note, there's greed mode, which I really like. The closest analog is like rainbow chest mode in Gungeon. You only do shops. You don't really do the exploration phase. It's just the kind of strategy layer.
Yeah, it is one. All the fighting happens in one big room per floor that generates new waves of enemies as on a timer or yeah. as you kill stuff.
Enemies and money. And then you are given access to a shop. They'll always restock to kind of craft your build through this. It is, it's fun. I like doing a whole lot. The game stopped supporting it. I don't think that it is a priority, but I'm a big champion of it.
It is a narrower play space. You are making fewer decisions, although the decisions you are making are still incredibly critical.
You're making the critical decisions more often.
Yeah.
Like you're making item decisions more often and making resource and room navigation decisions never, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably about it for what kind of game it is. Let's get into the aesthetics. We've teased it long enough.
Yeah. I do want to, after we've talked about this, I do want to dip back and talk a little bit more about repentance, if that's okay. If that feels like it's within the remit of this episode.
Everything's within the remit.
Hell yeah. Welcome to the remit, motherfuckers.
Remit.
Gary, I called the listeners motherfuckers. Can I call the listeners motherfuckers?
Not only once.
Shit, I called it. Can I reference calling them motherfuckers?
Only once.
Okay.
You just broken it. The aesthetically, we will talk about Repentance, the biggest expansion of all time for anything.
Yeah.
But aesthetically, so you know what you're looking at if you've never played this before, it is this cute, gross, lo-fi kind of idea. This is, your character designs are cute. Mm-hmm. They are straight up kawaii, but they are kawaii versions of gross things,
yes.
generally.
I feel like, do we want to combine this with a talk about plot, or do you want to handle that separately?
Let's do that separately, because we got to get into the music and stuff, too.
Okay.
And just kind of the graphic quality of this, the level of fidelity and things.
Yes. This is a video game about a young child's imagination, which means it is obsessed with low-grade body horror.
Low-grade body horror and poop.
Corpses and poop and pee and spit. Not that much cummies.
Almost none.
In fact, I think there's none. There's very little sex in this game, I will say. Thank Christ.
Even though there is a little kid's idea of things like lipstick and panties and stuff. This little boy, you know. But it is not sexual at all. That is a huge off-put for people. We're going to talk about maybe how to overcome that, how we overcame it. But the game that's about a baby being abused and poop, that's not a strong sell.
Yeah.
Ed McMillan, for all that he's created one of my favorite games of all time, good developer, does have some edgelord tendencies.
Yeah, I feel like, they're there.
That come through in his stuff. And I think that puts a lot of people off. At the time this came out in 2011, that was less jarring. than it is now, I find, in that at the time I was pretty open to it. Like, it did not bother me. Now, even if somebody said, hey, this is a game about a baby being abused and there's a bunch of poop in it, I'd be like, no, you know?
Yeah.
No.
It's a lot of the aesthetics are dead baby jokes.
Yes.
Like, both literally and as an idea.
Yes.
Huge. Like, one of your characters is just straight up a dead baby.
Yep. A blue dead baby.
There are items that give you the effect of really, you know, life destroying, like, you know, huge tragedy, birth defect kind of things.
Yes. This is all part of the price of admission. This.
All of which is married in with a very take a shotgun and fire it at the wall approach to religious trauma.
Yes. A little kid obsessed with poop, body horror, and then also religion. This
and specifically that God wants to punish you.
Yes. This is set out Edmund's specific feelings about dealing with his religious upbringing through this is processed through this. This was an explicit goal even in the game jam version of this to kind of deal with that. On a basic level, we have pixel art here that is cute as shit, though. And that feels like a contradiction. You're going to get monsters that are made of horrific stuff. You know, just different kind of body horrors, different mutants, different representations of body parts. And they're adorable in a way that is sometimes hard to get across. It's one of the cutest games.
It is. The original Isaac, the Flash Isaac, was did not use the pixel aesthetics that were added for Rebirth. The pixel aesthetics are better, I think, uniformly.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And a lot of the charm is in the faces of a lot of these enemies. I don't know if I don't like this term, but I'm going to use it because it feels like the most accurate. But derpy is I don't think that's a great term to use, probably, but there is
like a little dopey.
Yeah, an adorable guilelessness to a lot of the faces, despite the fact that they're trying to kill you.
Yeah, it's that juxtaposition, not only of the subject matter, but also the violence.
Yeah.
Like what you're doing with how adorable everything is. And the idea that as you go further into the game, things get less adorable.
Yes.
As you go further into, you know, we'll talk about the story, but talk about, you know, as you go through, you get further into Isaac, he's basically dying in one version of the story here. As that's happening, his imagination's getting darker and darker, and you're running into things that are scarier and less cute and harmless looking as you go.
Yeah, yeah. It makes those the cuteness that everything starts with makes those pivots into horror much more effective.
Yes.
And a lot of times it's by removing facial features that they do that. Like the scariest thing in this game is a boss called Dogma that we'll talk about as part of the story, which is just completely faceless biblical angel shit.
Yep. A biblical angel thing with static, you know, as we'll talk about that. It's those pivots are really good. And, you know, some of the dialogue in this genuinely unnerving. It takes a while to get to that.
Gary, I need to go get a snack. Do you want to talk about the music while I just... house a couple protein bars?
Yeah. Will does not care for the art form we humans call music.
It's just sounds, and I've heard them all.
Yeah. The original soundtrack for this, done by Danny Baranowski. I have a lot of affection for the original soundtrack. It is a lot of twitchy drum machines and kind of haunted lullaby-like minor key like swings and kind of lilts. This was taken over in the Nicalis version by Ridiculon, who is a band and takes in things in a little bit more of a metal direction. It still evokes it, but there are more metal guitars. There's a little bit more kind of menace through it. So I like the original one a little bit more. Personally, there are mods if you want to get the original one back. This is a hot topic among people who are not Will.
Yeah. There's a lot. I will say there's a lot of sad feeling in the music.
Yeah, it is depressing and gets more depressing as you go. Starts off fairly whimsical, especially the original soundtrack version of the first floor, and then gets darker and darker as you go.
I will add, in the interest of acknowledging that sounds in certain rhythms are pleasant to some people, what's your favorite song in the game, Gary?
It's the opening song from the original version. So yeah. Basement, the Danny Baranowski version. I love that song.
I really like the Downpour song from Repentance, which is one of the new floors you get with the last expansion. A very kind of mournful, quiet little track that is very catchy to me.
Yeah, and works, like, is very appropriate. I don't want to badmouth Ridiculon. We're a real band, you know, as a guy. Also, I think that the Ridiculon guy voices the narrator. I read that. It's good as well. I just slightly prefer. It's apples and oranges, and I like both fruits, baby. Story a little bit, because this is something that is really complicated, has changed as it's gone on. The story as it was complete, you know, 10 years ago is not the story as it is today. It's told in a really interesting way through this game. You largely get this intro cutscene, you get ending cutscenes, and then little semiotic markers of abuse that you had to kind of read between the lines.
So the basic story of The Binding of Isaac is a little boy growing up in a house with his mother. She is obsessed with religious TV, and he likes to draw pictures and play with mostly self-made toys.
Yeah, he's got a Game Boy initially. She takes away his non-self-made toys.
Yeah, basically, she starts getting messages from God. This is obviously inspired by the actual biblical story of The Binding of Isaac. But she starts getting messages from God, she presumes, telling her that Isaac is being corrupted by the world. So she takes things away from him. Eventually, the voice tells her that Isaac is still corrupted and must be killed. At which point, Isaac flees into his closet, where there is inexplicably a trap door down into, quote unquote, the basement of the house, which is the start of this sprawling labyrinth you are now moving down through.
Yeah, that continues to move down. The basement just keeps going. You have a basement, a second floor of the basement, and it opens up into caves. It opens up into crypts. And eventually, you end up in what can only be described as your mom's womb. You end up in a biological...
In the initial run of the game, you do not go into your... Because the first final boss is Mom.
Yes.
Yeah. And in the very first version of the story, when you beat her, a Bible falls. We cut back to this animated style, this like hand-drawn cutscene. A Bible falls off a shelf back in what looks like Isaac's room and hits her on the head and kills her.
I mean, at least knocks her out. He's fine for now, is the implication.
So God has chosen to save Isaac in that case, which is, that's the whole story of The Binding of Isaac in the Bible, right? God tells you to sacrifice your kid. You go to do it. God says, psych!
Yeah, it's one of the worst Bible stories in terms of not taking the Bible literally. It's a mean story.
If God tells you to kill your kid, you do it till he tells you to stop. And then yells at you.
I suppose so, if that's the lesson you want to get from things. The thing that's interesting about this, not only are you getting the story slowly as you get more endings, unlock more characters, but the story is rewritten and revised as you go. You know, we think Isaac went here, his mother got knocked out, but maybe she didn't. As this happens, you start getting more conflicting information and lore that touches on tons of things through this. There's a little bit of gender stuff in this. They'll show like Polaroids of Isaac dressing up as a mother. Some of the characters are obviously Isaac as a lady through this, possibly having dead siblings through this. Yeah. And then eventually implies that he died, suffocated and was missing. And then maybe that's not true. Maybe he is a kid whose parents fight and he kind of imagines his way out of it.
Yeah.
It is still kind of unclear. That is the most chronologically recent ending, is it was all basically a story he was telling.
But even people argue about whether that is...
Yes. It is ambiguous on purpose, I guess, is more my point.
Yeah. So it's as Gary said, it's a lot of it is about how this vibe is being communicated to you. So in between levels, anytime Isaac is represented in like big boss fight cutscenes and things like that, there's always a cutscene before you fight the boss. He is shown as a little baby in the corner, curled up and weeping.
Yes.
Like it's again, worth noting, you fight in this game by crying at your enemies.
And you, when I talked about the kind of markers of abuse that you get from items, like an example of that is you pick up a wooden spoon as an item, it makes you go faster.
Yeah.
It's because you got hit by a wooden spoon and your character gets little bruises.
Or all of the health, like most of the health increasing items in this are dog food.
Dog food. Yeah. Things that are rotten, regular food, stuff you can find. You know, increases your health, but it's not food you should give a baby. You know?
And then also in between levels, you're getting cutscenes showing Isaac being either pushed around by his mom or ostracized by peers, leading to the ongoing argument about how old Isaac is in this, which Gary and I will never resolve and will fight about till the end of our days.
Yeah, not resolve on this podcast for sure.
We could.
One of those
we
is penis right falls now. Off. So it's that kind of thing. These are kind of dreams. Down here, so it's setting you into a mode for symbolism. Obviously, you know, the mom creature that you fight in this with the gigantic cankles who just screams at you and is an eye, a hand, and a foot, you know, things used to kick and watch.
It's like other getting things, into a very nasty boss fight with Nanny from Muppet Babies.
It is, you know what? It is a lot like that. Womp, 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 womp. She didn't speak like that.
Gary, God, you can't do that to me.
The idea, so once you're in this kind of symbolism mode, you'll notice other things that are symbolic. The reason why you pick up that Isaac may be asphyxiated, hiding from his mother, is because you unlock that blue baby character.
Yeah.
And once that happens, you start noticing things that are visually themed around asphyxiation or drowning. You know, characters who are drowned, a character named Hush, who their entire aesthetic is one of... like a suffocated person underwater.
And at least one layer of the story here is Isaac's family was abusive, or at least they were fighting. There's a whole other conversation to be had about how this game treats mothers versus fathers, which
is... We'll get into that, yeah.
Yeah. And then McMillan has talked in interviews about wanting to hide in his own imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And the game semi-literalizes that with the idea that Isaac didn't go down into a hole in the ground. He got into a toy chest in his closet and asphyxiated.
Yes.
That's at least one layer of the story that you can take as what actually is happening in this game.
Further, there's a whole element and kind of a string of story things of Isaac internalizing what his mother's saying about him and giving way to Satan, believing it. There are character versions of him that are a demon here, and many endings that show a kind of dark Isaac coming through. Again, that's him believing it. There are dead versions of him. And there are kind of two big endings. That is one, that implication that he's asphyxiated, he's drowned. Maybe he succumbed to evil and believed it. Maybe he didn't. But these are his dying thoughts.
Yeah, and then we get like one of the very last endings you can unlock shows his mother literally posting missing posters and going out looking for him because she doesn't realize he's dead in the toy chest in his room.
Yeah, and many of the endings she discovers him, and it's pretty rough.
I got my wife addicted to this game. She cannot watch the story stuff.
It's sad.
It's affecting. Like the voice actor, I do not have the voice actor's names at hand. The voice actor who plays mom is very effective at making things sound bad.
Yes. We talk about how moms are treated in this, versus how dads and how that kind of changed over time. Mm-hmm. I assume that Edmund McMillan is working something out. You're here. Seems like I don't think he's saying something about moms versus dads in this. And eventually where this ends is in a more condemnatory state on the father.
It is. The very original versions of this game have no signifiers whatsoever for fatherhood, which is its own statement, right?
Yes. The father is absent. They start implying that he was there at one point.
Yeah, in the afterbirth, because it's part of the whole DLC. There's a whole ARG clusterfuck that happened with the first Rebirth expansion called Afterbirth. But
yes,
the upshot is that they started layering in ideas about Isaac's missing father as a more possibly beneficial force, because it would be hard to be less beneficial than the way his mother is portrayed.
Yeah, trying to kill him. Opens the game trying to kill him with a knife, with mom's knife, the titular knife.
And step on him and fire lasers and make...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really especially a rude that, mother.
That blue mom, that version that summons the high-level enemies.
Oh, God, it sucks.
And Isaac lionized his father. We pick this up again through item descriptions and kind of subtlety, in addition to endings, including something I think is kind of interesting, which is the ending to an outside game. We'll talk about The Legend of Bumbo. The ending of that is a possible ending for this that is non-canonical, different game series, but it's done in the same style. And implies a different ending for the father, that he became unhoused. Legend of Bumbo, one of the most sensitive portrayal of the unhoused.
It really does. Like, Bumbo want coin.
Bumbo want coin, and don't we all? It's very relatable through this.
It's worth noting, there is almost no text in this video game.
Yeah.
There is the opening narration, and there's the small amounts. There's narration at the end of the very first ending, and there is narration at the end of the very last ending. And other beyond that, almost all text is very sparse descriptive text of what items do, usually not really telling you everything they do.
And, these things you're picking up yourself through kind of, visual cues.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is, like, in terms of what it explicitly tells you, there's no, like, lore descriptions for items. There is just what you can infer from this item being in this little kid's purgatory imagination hell.
Yeah. There's an archaeology element to it. Mm-hmm. Repentance came out. And Repentance changed the story a lot and gave it kind of a final button. This is the final expansion. Before we get into the story editions for that, is there anything we want to talk about specifically with the gameplay editions, even though that's
out of order? Repentance is fascinating. I wrote a big piece about this when it came out for the AV Club. But Gary, you know this part better than I do, but Repentance started roughly as a mod.
Yes. Anti-Birth is the name of the mod, because Afterbirth was widely considered to be a disappointment.
Afterbirth is mostly pretty good. Afterbirth Plus, people were not happy with. It did not. The boss it adds is bad.
It just didn't do enough. The items were fairly uninspired.
Yeah.
So fans took it upon themselves to make something called Anti-Birth, which is a really, really ambitious mod.
Mm-hmm.
And because Edmund McMillan is good, rather than giving them a big cease and desist, he hired him and took a bunch of the stuff and incorporated it into
brought them on as the design team, which I do not think was it's you always want to avoid auteur theory, right? Auteur theory's death. McMillan has been the loudest creative mind on this game for a long time, even though from Rebirth on, Nicalis has, that is a big team of programmers and developers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who do not usually get a lot of the credit for how well this game works.
Agreed. In fact, it was very controversial when they came on with the fandom in a way that was really kind of unfair to them.
I mean, the fandom for this game is rough sometimes.
Yeah, other than us.
We're really good.
There's also some controversy that I do not recall with Nicalis.
There was a thing with them not handling, I think, contractors right or something.
There we go.
I'm not saying Nicalis Publishing is a great company, but there are a lot of programmers who are the reason this thing actually works.
Yeah. I just want to get that out of the way. So you know how life in 2026 is a never-ending parade of just disclaimers.
Yeah.
So you don't get yelled at for ignoring something that was not germane to the conversation. It's great. Repentance came out as a story thing, huge, as a gameplay thing, fucking nuts.
Yeah. So to be clear, Edmund hired the Anti-Birth team to come and serve as co-designers for this expansion. which I think the play shows was desperately needed to kind of get out of a little bit of a rut.
Yeah. And Antibirth, I played a lot of Antibirth. Antibirth was good. Mm-hmm. It was big. It was a, you know, absolutely worthy expansion. Edmund, instead of just incorporating it, expanded it maybe three times its size, four times its size. It is one of the biggest expansions of a video game ever. There are B-side versions of all of the characters now that have wildly different mechanics.
Yeah, and let's talk for a second about how willing this game is to bury incredible amounts of content.
Yes. Getting those characters is really difficult.
It's secret. You have to, Repentance adds two new paths through the game. One of which is, I would say, significantly less intuitive to find the first time than the other. They're both really unintuitive, but.
Yeah. One of them is just an alt challenge path downwards.
Yeah. Where at least when you beat the bosses, you're getting a different door opens up.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of see, although in those alternate paths, you have to do special things to get to the end of the path.
Yes. To get to the very end of it. There's also a way to go back up through this, which gives you that canon ending we're going to talk about, or more canon. But it also, if you do something very unintuitive up there, which, you know, we don't need to spoil, you can look it up if you want to play it, you unlock this B-side version of a character.
And these are not like, oh, it's a different skin. These are, how many base characters are there in Isaac? Is it?
I'm trying to remember. It's a lot, though.
Is it 13?
I think it's 13.
Something like that. These are 13 brand new characters that have relationships with how the original characters work, but are mechanically incredibly different.
In a way that almost always feels like it's breaking the rules and doing a new thing that the game hadn't done before. Oftentimes literally doing that, but always feels like it, even if it's not.
Like, even the most simple of which is, these are called tainted characters. Tainted Isaac gives you more. Every item in the game switches between two different items so that you basically have double the choices, but imposes an inventory limit on you. So now you are making the strongest run you can out of, I think, 10 items.
It's eight. Yeah.
Eight.
Yeah. And or down to a character. So the thief character has a crafting mechanic.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
No, it's not fun.
It's not very fun, but it's wild because that's something that, so instead of getting items and picking them up, you're taking your keys and resources and pooping them out into items.
With like complicated recipes and stuff.
Yeah. And the more rare the pickup is, the better the item. You can memorize that stuff. There are crafting recipes in this.
Some of them are just straight power builds, like just straight like, hey, what if we just made a really powerful character who, because again, the aesthetics is a baby who has another baby attached to her with an umbilical cord that she fires out of her stomach for a lot of damage.
For a lot of damage. Or a skeleton baby that has a melee weapon instead of shooting tears. Another kind of character, that character can swap modes. There's another character that is two different characters. You control it once.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
And some of these are not tainted characters. Some of these are just the original characters. But
yeah. One's the big Antibirth innovation was having those two characters at once. Very difficult. So mechanically, just hugely generous. Unlocks a lot of space to play and items. Narratively, it did something really interesting. As you... go ahead.
Well, so it has one path that is just full-on demonization of your mother.
Yes.
It is just a more intense version of what's already been there, where after you beat mom, you go into her womb. In this version, you are instead going into her dead womb and then down into a zone just called the corpse, where you fight basically her skull coming out of a big thing of meat and corruption.
Mm-hmm. That is absolute demon mom. That unlocks an ending where Isaac is drawing that.
Uh-huh.
And Isaac's mom comes in and goes, "Is this how you see me? you know, the game is a little bit aware of it being unfair there, or critical of Isaac, the character, for being
possibly
unfair. Although
she then responds to that by being abusive.
She is abusive, you know, but it is also, you know, be hard to walk in on your kid drawing a monster version, I suppose.
If he'd just not written mother at the top.
I know. It could have been anybody. That could have been like Gorblex. Like, kids just have imaginations. Make that thing fight your G.I. Joes.
Is that how you see your Uncle Gorblex?
Yes.
He took you to a baseball game.
Hey, kiddo, what the hell? the version where you go
guess
up,
I'll
though,
eat both these ice creams.
It gets a lot more nuance, and it is genuinely harrowing. As you make your way up, doing increasingly challenging things, working your way back through the floors you've been through, you overhear the audio of your parents fighting.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite voice acting in games.
Like, it's really affecting. I want to take a second to note, going up the first time it happens to you after, again, for a lot of people, 1,500 hours of just going down.
Yeah.
Going up feels wild.
I love how often this game feels like it's breaking rules that it set. It is like a nonstop refrain of this. The parents are fighting, and this is a way that shows that culpability of the dad. He's a deadbeat. He sucks. Yeah. I get some kind of addict. I get gambler vibes.
He's a gambler.
Yeah, he's a gambler. He takes the money. He fucked everything up through this.
At the same time that the mother is descending into religious mania.
Yeah, she's never innocent.
Hold on. Let me, I should say what is actually happening to her, which is you are insane.
Yes. Perfect delivery. What do you mean? It's gone. I spent it already. As you make your way up in this one,
I was partying with Gorblex.
That's right. Hey brother.
God, Gorblex is so chill. If Isaac had Gorblex.
Unky Gorblex. Maybe he gets raised by Unky Gorblex after all this. When you get to the top, Isaac has a fairly mature revelation for a kid his age. As you get up to the top, and you do eventually fight a big kind of grody version of mom, but it more symbolizes religion.
So the thing, like the really amazing thing that happens in repentance is you get, so you're going back up through the floors you've gone through. They are not exactly the same floors. Although cleverly, if you left an item room behind on your way down, it'll still be waiting for you.
Yep.
Which is key to this game has so many mechanics. That is, one of the mechanics is if you skip item rooms, you can unlock different item rooms that have a really powerful pool of items in them. You get to basement one, the first floor of the game, and you hit, and then you ascend again. And now, after again, your 1500 hours or whatever, you're back in Isaac's house.
And, you know, you move through, you check out your bedroom, you kind of walk around, but you go into the living room and there's a TV here. And this introduces the first in like a series of kind of bosses here at the end, Dogma, which you had mentioned earlier as like a really scary image. Yeah. This is Isaac realizing that his mother was in turn corrupted by this thing. His mother had, you know, you hear a preacher, the kind of, which like don't really have TV preachers the same way, I feel like.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's like internet shit now, but
that's very much I feel like an Edmund McMillan childhood thing.
Yes. I remember it. I remember seeing, you know, stuff like that. Preaching as you fight this basic idea of the TV, of this indoctrination, and then fight kind of religion, this thing that corrupted your mom, including versions of the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
Who come through. Having this revelation, and then you get a real wham ending after that as well.
Nice TV tropes in Gary.
Thank you. Yeah, I knew you'd pick it up. Where you get the story of Isaac defeating that, kind of being triumphant. It says what some of the characters symbolize. You know, he shed his doubt and he, you know, his fear, and he's the lost and blue baby fall off. And then the dad is narrating this, and the dad says, "It's your story, Isaac. Is that, are you sure that's how you want it to go?" And the story starts over again. And instead of Isaac and his mother, it's Isaac and
his
parents.
Right there is also the only time in the game you ever hear Isaac's voice.
Yeah. Little kid. You know, and the dad starts over, Isaac and his parents. It's not just Isaac and his mother. The implication being this was all a story.
Yeah.
For a kid with a very like dark imagination.
A really, yeah. It's, and I again, I wrote about this a little bit, but it's very affecting to me to have a story that is this cynical for so long at mm-hmm. the very end show a ray of hope.
Yeah. Yeah, you earn it. It earns it. You know, it's not saccharine because you put in the work. Like, I suffered and felt bad enough to deserve feeling this good. Like, basically.
I'm gonna indulge in a bad practice here and psychoanalyze a video game developer based off of what's in their game.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like partly by letting other people into the design space and kind of taking the hand off the tiller, it does feel like there's a little bit of reflection on Edmund too, to finally let this thing have a happy ending after more than a decade of relentlessly dark downer endings to this story.
And not only just of this story, but also just as a product.
Yeah.
You know, as you mentioned, he's not like the guy who's Isaac is super successful in some ways. I mean, I don't know to the degree that he feels this, but you can imagine him feeling a little bit trapped mm-hmm. in Isaac, because it is so successful.
I mean, Mutagenix is going to fix that, Gary.
He's been working on a new game for a really long time.
So long. It's gone through so many different versions.
It's actually coming out at some point. There's trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
But you can get the sense almost that he was trapped in it and getting that new blood, not only freedom narratively, but freedom from a gameplay perspective. Like, let him break out of a lot of assumptions he was making.
Yeah. And again, people argue, oh, this is also just a dying fantasy, or this is another thing. And like, or this is Isaac in heaven rewriting his story now that he has the power. I don't care. It's tonally.
It's nutritious. Shift. Yeah. It's, well, and it's a nutritious shift. Like mm-hmm. all these endings for me can exist at the same time.
Yeah.
Like the story of Isaac can be vague to me. Isaac may have died. That's a really sad story. He may have gone missing. He may have gotten killed by his mother. He may have just been telling a story. His father may be a homeless person that he made little cardboard toys out of to play in a separate game that's really good and didn't get any support. Or, you know, any of those things can be true. I'm going to go ahead and eat the emotion of all of them. They all feel nutritious and earned and cool to me.
Like, and it is amazing that a game that is this mechanically robust and is this focused on mechanics can still produce that kind of feelings. I've played a lot of roguelikes. I don't have one feeling about anything that happens in Gungeon.
I don't either. Me either. Even though the idea of a gun that can shoot the past is really evocative.
Oh, it's a great phrase.
And even roguelikes that are meant to be story-based do not tend to give me a whole lot of feelings.
I feel like more about this than I feel about like Children of Morta.
Yeah, same. You know, and part of it, and keep in mind all the things we said before, there's a lot of poop in this game.
Yeah.
Like for it to kind of pull a lot of poop to do this kind of puerile bullshit and then wham you with some real human emotions and human truths is a really cool magic trick that Isaac does multiple times over the course of your time with it.
I think it's interesting that a lot of roguelikes because of how they are, they take as their themes repetition.
Yeah.
Because that gels with the play. Isaac is not, I would say, about that.
There's not a canon reason you're restarting.
Yeah.
When that first happened with roguelike things, that was a big innovation. You know, in the story, your character is actually coming back.
Yeah.
Isaac hand waves that. It doesn't matter.
And I think it's stronger and more. There's so many like things in this game. I feel like we're getting into wrap up thoughts, and we haven't even talked about Four Souls, which we're going to have to spend about 15 to 20 minutes on.
Like, a couple hours on
the incredibly successful card game for some fucking reason, even though it's just more complicated Munchkin.
Yes.
But there's a lot of thing like this influenced a lot of stuff, but it also the things that are great about it are stuff that has not been imitated as much as you would expect.
Yeah. The idea of a roguelike concerning itself with the nature of repetition was fresh when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of became a little bit trite.
Yeah.
As a thing, because if that's your kind of mono theme for a genre or a subgenre, that is going to get old. There are only so many different stories you can tell about that kind of bit here. By never engaging that in the first place, I think this is free to go in a lot of different directions, a lot more different directions.
And it feels more holistic. This feels like a game about processing childhood.
Yeah. Because it is.
A bad childhood in this case, but just also there's so much dream logic to the way this stuff works. Like, dream logic and jokes mixed together in a way that I think is fundamentally what childhood is.
And references that won't age well.
Yeah.
Like, of memes from 2011. Shoop de whoop. It has that feeling because it is handcrafted by a person. Like, this is a personal story. This is so clearly, you know, auteur theory is death. We talked about that. But the kind of story and theming of this is so clearly one person's trauma and processing of that. Like, all good art comes from one person's real feelings. Like, you can make a good game and write a good story, but you're not going to have this kind of real touchingness unless somebody's working something out.
I'm going to say the dreaded P word, parasocial. I do feel like I learned something about Edmund McMillen by the time I've played with, like, spent with this game.
Yeah. And
more
and
than I did in an hour long conversation I had with him.
And related to something in him, even though my childhood, while not great shakes, was nothing like this. You know, there's a markers of abuse in my childhood, but it's not the same kind of thing. I felt like, oh, this is a real human feeling. This feeling of hiding in a chest because your parents are fighting. Like, I've done that. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not literally a chest, but I've hidden in a closet. I could still hear it, but it still felt like hiding, you know, a real thing. I felt closer to him. And that's the best thing art can do, is, you know, tell us the ways that we're the same and we're, you know, not let us be divided. It succeeds at being high art while also being a game about cute poops. Crazy.
And then, so The Binding of Isaac Four Souls, released in, let me look it up real fast. New booster packs and add-ons. Oh shit. Yeah. I accidentally went to the store page. Yeah, I don't want that.
I kickstarted it. I did the all in Kickstarter because I was very excited. I like board games, card games. I love Isaac. There's not Isaac merchandise. It's Munchkin, which I don't like.
Yeah. Launched June 27, 2018, broke its funding goal of 50,000 within the first hour and a half. The game has similar rules to Magic the Gathering. Wikipedia, what are you fucking on?
No, that's not true.
That's so fucking high.
Yeah, that's really not true.
Not seen that sentence before, and I'm so fucking angry.
It makes me want to edit Wikipedia, which I never like to do.
Yeah,
I never want to have that feeling. There's a card game, wildly successful card game with those four
souls. I'm sorry. I was making that digression as a joke. Gwen?
Yeah, there's not a whole reason to talk about it. I like Bumbo. We mentioned that earlier because of the ending. This is a spinoff Edmund attempted to make, and like what I think is cool, made it, but what I think is cool about it is
with
that,
James Interactive was the programmer on it.
Thank you. I should have looked that up. The thing about this game is it's really good, it's really interesting. It wasn't as successful, it didn't do as well, and I think thus did not become as supported.
Game has, it had a troubled really troubled release. And this is when I talked to McMillen, was around the release of this, and he was definitely stressed out about it, and definitely, I think that probably contributes.
Yeah.
And also, if you're comparing any success to fucking Isaac has sold so many copies. There's no good way to get the numbers,
because it's been re-released like a million different kinds. There's so many different versions of it you can get.
And there's, you know, all of the different expansions and all of that. But Isaac has sold insanely well.
Yes.
By 2015, Rebirth and the original had sold 5 million copies. It's been a decade. If that number hasn't, I don't know, multiplied by 10?
It's got to be a lot more. Yeah, I'm bad with the figures. With things that are numbers and measures and stuff, but it's just got to be a lot more. It's very successful. Bumbo wasn't, and it didn't get that support, even though I think it could have used it.
Bumbo. So very briefly, Bumbo is a really interesting attempt to take a Bejeweled Match 3 kind of gameplay and make a good roguelike combat game out of it.
With elements of Magic the Gathering on it, like, which is ironically, an explicit influence on it. So you are casting spells through, you know, Bejeweled gameplay and fighting enemies with positioning and such, with this really awesome cardboard craft aesthetic.
The aesthetics on it are incredible.
Absolutely incredible. Really interesting. I think this could have been a great game instead of a good one if it had the support and got expanded and kind of refined as it went.
Yeah, I think so. As is, it's technically, it's got some glitches, and it just, the gameplay isn't quite as robust as it needs to be.
Like, it's real fun while you're playing it, once you can grok it, but it's you do run out of steam.
It's also, again, part of, like, the Isaac's childish obsession with bums.
Yes, who may be his father, implied by this ending to be his father. I went off to be homeless. Really good. Check that out if you like those kind of things.
It's worth 10 hours. It is absolutely worth 10 hours and the $20. If you like Isaac and you have never gone and played Bumbo, go play Bumbo.
Or if you have any weakness for a Bejeweled-like. Like a Bejeweled-like that fucks with things, I like that.
Yeah, a lot of your powers and stuff are about manipulating the board in really cool ways. The closest analog I can think of is like the Puzzle Quest games.
I was just about to say, yeah. Like, and when Puzzle Quest 1 came out, that felt like a revelation. Like doing a Bejeweled where you have control and power-ups and kind of a build was really, really neat to me. And it's kind of our wrap-up here. I had two questions. And we can also share any wrap-up thoughts that appeal to us. Why do we tolerate this aesthetic? Again, and this might be a question more for myself, just because I don't know exactly how you feel about it. But listeners might be surprised. People have like written to me and been like, Gary, I'm sorry, I can't play the poop dead gay baby game. I just can't stomach it. Well, and I don't think they just mean that they're grossed out. I think they mean that like it is too distasteful and immature to feel like it has worthiness in it.
And immature about serious topics.
Yes. And like, it's one of those things where the only answer I have to that is fair. Like, yeah it is.
Like, Gary, have you considered that you're a nasty little fucko?
Yeah, I'm a goblin, but I'm a hidden goblin. And on shows, when we, on this network, I tend to, things like this, I do not like. I don't like, and this, you know, you mentioned, like mentioned 2011 memes. Like, I hate Borderlands for that shit. I think that sucks. I hate Guacamelee for that shit. I don't like games that do that. This game got in on the ground floor with me. And I think that because I got in on the ground floor and because the play is compelling, it hooks into me long enough to where I got to see the trick, which is that it's doing those kind of deeper, more thematic things.
Yeah. So let's start with the fact it's cartoons, right? These are cartoon poop. Like the poop we're talking about is poop emojis.
Yes. It'd be horrible if they were photorealistic.
Now, are there like Harlequin babies as familiars and stuff that look pretty horrible? Yeah, they're in there. Yeah.
Kind of a cute version of one, though. If you know what that is, don't Google image search it.
I wouldn't. There's also, I touched on this earlier, the lack of text in this game, I think, is massively to its benefit.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if this told you the story.
Like, if this had an authorial tone running through it, like actual like writing authorial tone, I think I would be given the deepest chills down to my bones.
It might not have worked on me.
Yeah.
You know, it's this combination of things that were a little bit off-putting. You know, you're right that they are cartoons. It's gross, but it's also just, it's not about it being visually gross. It's more about it just kind of being off-putting and you know, put you off your beer a little bit. So it's a thing that kind of hit me at the right time where it had that play. It had these things that put me off, but because I got in at the right moment and it didn't have more things that put me off to this idea of writing, like that would have probably been enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it is only by a thin margin that this ended up working on me the way it did. I'm really happy it did, but it touch and go.
There. Yeah. It is transgressive in a way that is surface level immature, but it is by design. It is meant to be transgressive in the way a 9-year-old's brain is transgressive.
Yeah.
Because Isaac is canonically 9, and you'll never convince me otherwise.
Yeah. You listened to his voice and you thought he was 9? And then you thought it was a 9-year-old's voice?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you met a 9-year-old?
I've met a lot. I used to work in the school. I used to teach 9-year-olds. Like babies? Maybe seven. I'll give you 7, Gary. Can you take 7?
I'm going to need at least 5.
6. 6 is then the compromise point.
Can we do 5 going on 6?
What does that mean?
As a compromise. It doesn't mean anything. Could just say it.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. Anything else with the aesthetic? I feel like we covered a lot of this on the way. This was a question I set out to answer when I was putting together these notes, but I think we kind of got to the root of it.
We did a great job with it, Gary, and I think this is the best WAF there's been.
It's a good WAF. Here's another question, though, hot shot. If you think was an easy question.
Oh, fuck.
So I think that we have established, and I think we've made a fairly compelling argument for how important this game is. This game is not brought up very much. There's the two of us. It's a big game with streamers. Sold mm-hmm. really well. It is not a game that receives this kind of analysis, really. There is kind of like, you know, a game's critical mass, you know, massive critics, like a game's intelligentsia kind of thing that I feel like would dine on some of these themes. They don't. Yeah. You don't hear about this. It is not something where you're getting, you know, they exist, but they're not well viewed, like video essays about this, the same way you're getting them about like Siona's Sacrifice. Or video essays on it from like a play perspective. This is a largely ignored game for being as important as it is.
Boy, I'm not sure I believe that thesis entirely. I get why you're saying it. I have seen a fair amount of conversation about it, but I'll play in the space with you because I think it's a good question to ask at the very least. I'm just not sure it lines up with my understanding. And of course, it's been talked about extensively by my streaming rival, the Northern Lion Man.
Yes.
Coming after the king, you know, right?
Several streamers, like Let's Play streamers who do not talk about the game very much and use it as a background thing to kind of goof around.
Yeah.
It is big in that sphere. It's not big in, say, like the Waypoint sphere or like a Kotaku sphere.
Yeah.
Or even like getting, you know, stuff in more... less arty, kind of more mainstream game things. Like, I think I've read one thing on it on like Rock, Paper, Shotgun at some point.
Sure.
But it's not a thing that I feel like has a big breakthrough presence.
So I've been weirdly insistent on this point. It's not something I'd really thought of before we got into this conversation. I think that is a point where the lack of text in the game is harmful to the video essayist brain. You know, it's hard to do a VODI when there's no item descriptions, right? When there's no text to like dig into and analyze.
Yeah.
Because the game runs off of impressions so much, and because it is so ambiguous, it is not a very easy game to solve. I think in terms of narrative discussion, it can be daunting.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Mechanically, you know? I think it's because it's 14 years old, 15 years old now.
I wanted to get its flowers mechanically so bad. And this is partly just me being, you know, fighting my Pokemon, championing my Pokemon.
Yeah.
But the things this does are truly important and innovative mechanically.
And I think we're in Seinfeld is unfunny territory to just completely wave my fucking TV Tropes flag.
Well, a little bit, where like the idea that, you know, these things, people don't like them because they're so foundational, but we also spend a good time talking about things that are not picked
wrong
up from this.
They're wrong. We're smarter than them. They're wrong.
We are smarter than them. Seinfeld is funny. But the other thing is they like,
George?
I wish even game developers took more of this. Like
Gary
Seinfeld
acknowledged that George is funny.
He's the best character on Seinfeld.
He's the best character on TV. Outside Duckman.
I like him more than Duckman.
What?
Similar voices.
What's wrong with you?
I'm not as into Duckman as you and Bob Mackie. You two should talk about that.
Absolutely. We'll have a long conversation about Eric Duckman and King Chicken.
Yeah. And that pig who hangs out with him.
His name's Cornfed and you knew it.
I did know it. I wanted more roguelikes to take things from this as well. You know, and take different things from it. There are little bits that are the Seinfeld are funny. And then the places where it has variants are largely ignored.
Like let's talk for a, because you've brought it up a couple times. Let's talk about Hades for a second.
Yeah.
Because Hades is the thing that got the attention you're talking about.
Yes.
So if you've never played Hades, it's by, God, I can't. It's so irritating that there's a studio called Supergiant and a studio called Supermassive.
They're Supergiant. Supermassive is the other one.
So Supergiant, they took this roguelite structure and they attached a really solid, more complicated action gameplay. and a huge narrative layer to it. Full of characters that you can imagine yourself having various flavors of intercourse with.
Yes.
It's very hard to imagine having any flavor of intercourse with anything in The Binding of Isaac, I hope.
Yeah. And for a game where you are inside a vagina for part of it.
Pretty major portion, yeah.
It made it horny. It tightened it up. It also narrowed the possibility space to a fine point.
Yeah, and there's value in that, right?
Sure. I just wish it wasn't monolithic. I wish it wasn't as frequent as a direction.
Hades out of the box is more fun to play than Isaac. An unupgraded run in Hades is more fun than an unupgraded run in Isaac. It feels better in the hands. It moves like butter. Isaac doesn't move like butter to start. No.
And even at its best, it doesn't move great. In a video game sense.
And Isaac is also willing to fuck you over.
Yeah, in a way
you
that
you can
Hades
have a good
not.
Run and the randomness can kill it.
You can also, in a way that is only barely true of a Hades, though, you can luck into something where you can't lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can do it almost right away as a thing. Modern roguelikes and the difference between, I think, Hades and Isaac are really interesting to compare in terms of, for me, what makes a game that is a game I'm going to play for 20 hours and have a good time with and like, which is a Hades, and a game that's going to get my dedication forever. And it's how much control the developer wants of your experience versus how much they're willing to cede to your choices and randomness. Hades is a tightly controlled experience, even putting aside the aesthetics and horniness and the good music and everything, the reasons why it was such a huge hit. Mm-hmm. It's a really tightly controlled experience.
Yeah, you control there's tightly. Variance in the weapons and things like that, but ultimately your verb set is fairly tightly constrained.
And even that variance in your individual weapons is something you have to unlock after a long period of time. Yeah. Like you might get a status effect on a weapon, but getting those crafting hammers that can make your weapon actually change is something that does not come out of the box.
Whereas you can boot up Isaac, walk into your first treasure room, and have your tiers completely function differently. Or have your relationship with the space function differently.
And that is something I really wish more game developers, not just in roguelites, but across the spectrum would do. It's something that I think is really special.
But it's also special because it's hard.
That is true. There is an element of like a lot of very tightly to me at this point, and this is an insane thing to say.
I'm excited.
It feels easier for me not for me because I don't design games. It feels easier to me and less inspired to make something like. Yeah, that's true. I made a game at one point to make a game that controls really well and feels good. Feels like it lacks imagination to me at this point. It is not sufficient.
So what you're saying is crazy and wrong, but I agree with it.
It's cool. Like, it's fun. But who cares? It's not doing anything new. I've played 1,000 games that feel like Hades. That feel like pretty good. You move around fast. You zip around crazily. I played tons of games like that.
Gary, again, what you're saying is asinine and stupid, and I hate it, and you're 100% correct.
Yeah.
Get to the end of the sentence where the joke lands.
there's no joke. I just think that is true.
But I was making a joke.
Oh, got you.
I was saying it's... You interrupted me before I said the part where, and you're absolutely right.
Oh, that is true. Well, I was feeling defensive. You call me stupid. We talked about that. I don't like that. Everything to Guppy, everyone. That is just really, at least rare. And as such, as somebody who plays a lot of video games, feels better to me. It's what's going to get my love. The same way that like a band, you know, you might, it's like somebody whose favorite band is the Beatles. You know, like, yeah, the Beatles are fucking great. We all know, you know, but what is the individual little bits, nicks and armors and unique things about them that make them yours? You know, that make them stand out. Isaac has a lot of that, whereas a lot of roguelites don't.
Can you give me two more metaphors?
It's a lot like if your favorite food is pizza.
Shit, Gary, my favorite food might be pizza.
Pizza's great. It does all the things right. We all
have
pizza.
Better food.
Oh, I don't know. Something more interesting, like a banh mi sandwich.
You can put banh mi stuff on the pizza.
You can. That's true. Pizzas aren't really prescriptive.
Wait, hold on, Gary. Banh mi pizza?
Be really good.
Can we stop this podcasting shit and go invent banh mi pizza?
I don't want to run a food cart. It seems like a lot of work, and it seems cold outside.
We'll get you a fucking space heater, buddy.
Yeah, give me a coat.
No coats.
Yeah, more coats. Double coat. But anyway, you know what I mean, right? It is a pedestrian kind of thing because it doesn't. It's not special. It just does all the things right. Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
does all the things right.
A lot of people have figured out hand feel, right?
Yeah. Yes, that is more my point. I like hand feel when it comes through. I like the broad breadth of hand feel. Like there's fast hand feel. We just did, we're doing Thief 2 for Watch Out for Fireballs next week. That game gives you a physicality and a feel to that is really unique and singular. Like it is super crafted. You feel heavy and like you exist in the space in a way that is unusual for video games. That is also a masterful feel. I appreciate feel as a thing.
And I know that you don't want to actually diminish the craft that goes into making that feel, but
I just see it all the time. You know,
A lot of like, you can have the feel, but then if it's in service of a design space that is not as large as this, again, there are, Gary, how many items are there in Isaac? Real fast.
Like 600.
I feel like I'm, okay. Making 600 items that mostly do something different and meaningful is an incredible accomplishment. You look at the item pools for the games that have come after this. They are not this large. They are a quarter the size, typically.
Yeah. Even the ones that are quite big, like a Gungeon or something like that.
And again, in Gungeon, they're all fucking guns.
Yeah, that is true.
They're cool. They're the coolest guns passes, in video games.
But yeah, they are guns. But yeah, for the most part, it is a more limited space. That is, I guess, kind of my point with this. You're correct.
And then also the development work that we talked. I meant to bring up this example earlier, but I wanted to zero in on an item real fast before we say goodbye. There's an item called Lost Fly in this game. Lost Fly was introduced in Afterbirth, so it's not that old of an item, which is to say it's like 6 years old in the 15-year span of this game. Lost Fly, it was a little white fly. It was largely regarded as one of the worst fucking items in this game. It was nothing, right? It was a little fly that would move. You would pick it up. It would move off of Isaac. It would go around the edges of the room and do basically nothing.
Like do laps. If an enemy happened to incidentally touch it, they would take damage. But enemies do not hang out on the borders of the room very often. They're trying to get to Isaac.
And when Repentance came out, someone clearly said, hey, this is an item that bums people out when they get it. This is an item that when people take it, they see that it's one third of getting a transformation effect, and that's it. And so they went and they tweaked it. What happens now? Enemies target it.
Mm-hmm. Which is a huge game changer. There's an item called Broken Modem, which you talked about, that makes things kind of glitch and freeze up.
Yeah.
It used to, it would do this with bullets, but then bullets would continue to fly. This made this a huge detriment. Mm-hmm. You would get hit by things that you weren't expecting. They decided to make it erase.
There's bullet patterns in this. So
yeah, there's bullet patterns you pick
unpredictability
up.
Unpredictability is bad.
Yes. They decided, no, we'll make the bullets disappear. They took care to make things more fun and more interesting on every level, not just better or not just tighter. They came up with an imaginative way to fix things that is, to me, just more impressive than like feels good. You know, I'm not trying to denigrate that as a thing, but I do think it's not as interesting. Again, kind of an insane thing to say, but I do, there's a gaming value for Gary's.
719 items in the game, by the way, for...
Yipes. That's not even counting trinkets?
I don't think that counts trinkets. That's just...
That certainly doesn't count trinkets.
There are items called trinkets in this that are smaller items that you can pick up and drop. We didn't talk about them.
Yeah. Any other like final wrap-up thoughts?
No, I think that's just like, at the end of the day, taking a game and then having that much swing to it and then putting in the work to make sure the swing is fun.
Yeah. Yep. Incredible thing to do. So much fucking love, care, and attention went into this. it is like undeniably when I do those, they have those little things where it, you know, it says this game or that game. That's supposed to determine your favorite game. Whenever I do that, Deus Ex pops up as number one. This is probably my favorite video game though. Like even against my will, like it is just, I'm always down for it. If I was on a desert island, like hands down, it would be the game I would take. It is just real special.
It's on the Switch now, which is, or the Steam Deck, which is the ideal way to play it.
Yep. And I can, picking up this week to replay, despite the fact that I've done thousands of hours, was a joy.
Yeah. I had a really good, I was doing runs against Mother, and then I'm trying to get completion marks on my Switch 2 save file.
Mm-hmm. I want to go play it now. Yeah. It's ludicrous. So great fucking game. If you can get past those things, and if these things we talked about appeal to you.
It is such a solid B plus.
It's almost as good as Enter the Gungeon. And it's just not quite as emotional because it doesn't have the gun that can kill the past.
I just really want to know about all them Children of Mortis.
Yeah. Each one, more children than the last. I've already played Legacy of the Wizard. I don't need Children of Mortis.
Hey, man.
Before we get into admin stuff, where can people find you, Will?
People are sick of me.
Yeah. But let's say they want to prank one of their friends.
Oh, okay. So if you would like to hear us talk much less seriously about The Binding of Isaac and with way more of me trying to joke about calling Gary asinine, but actually triggering his feelings.
Not asinine, stupid.
Okay. Did I call you? Gosh.
I think you said what I said was stupid. You said it was stupid and asinine. Close enough.
And again, it was on the way to actually saying what you were saying was incredibly apt and true and accurate.
You could just hear a lot of it in your voice, though. Anywho.
If you enjoy this, go listen to the adaptation to Kay's on the Sonic the Hedgehog films.
Yeah, Kay's there as well.
Yep.
Real ameliorating presence.
Go back, listen to Orb, the episode on Escape from the House of Mummies Part 2, where I think I make Gary as mad as I've ever made him at me on a podcast.
That was not as mad as ever. I've been way more mad at you. Okay. There's also the Undead Settlement episode, Bonfire Side Chat.
Mm-hmm.
And Everything to Guppy, which is the people who like it, love it. It's kind of like the Isaac of shows on Duckfeed.
I've never met a healthy seeming person who liked it.
No, but the people who like it really fucking love it.
Really like it.
Yeah.
You also go to the AV Club. I write a lot of stuff there. Check out our Infinite Scroll.
Yeah, game stuff. I like it. If you're listening to this, it is, you have a couple days to write in with responses about The Binding of Isaac. The deadline is always the 15th. It's at duckfeed.tv/contact. If you're going to write in about multiple games, leave multiple responses. And this month, the games are The Legend of Zelda, The Binding of Isaac, Thief 2, and RoboCop, Rogue City. And if you have things to say about next month's games for February, the deadline is February 15th. And those games are Mortal Kombat 2, Mega Man X4, and Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
And reminder, if you're leaving a comment specifically to talk about me, it's spelled C-U-C-K.
Yes. RoboCop and Indiana Jones are premium episodes. That means if you want to get those, you have to be a patron. Go on to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and give us the $5 tier currently, and you will get all of those, all the back ones, a bunch of bonus shows. We think it's a real good value.
I do get some of that money, though, so think about
that. That is true. You get more of the Guppy money.
Yeah.
You get all of the Guppy money in a breathtaking act of generosity on my part.
Yeah.
At the detriment to my mortgage and health. If you can also leave a rating review on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict. What else? Big thanks to Gwen. And big thanks to Kay. Big thanks to Kay for sitting out this week.
What am I thanking Kay for here, Gary?
Just hanging out.
Making me work?
Yeah.
I'm tired.
Just kind of taking care of herself, you know?
Okay, so this is like some blue sky language shit.
Yeah, this is some blue sky stuff.
Thank you so much for taking the effort to take care of
everyone
yourself.
Everyone listening, please validate. If you tweet, if you feel seen, or if you want Kay to feel seen,
edit in that I was nicer to Kay.
Yeah, Kay's great. It is just, I'm slipping more into Guppy mode as we hit the 2-hour mark.
I know.
Which is as long as the outside estimate I had for this episode. So,
Gwen, fade it out as we ramble and get increasingly angry at each other.
Well, no, I will. Oh. Until next time, what should we watch out for?
Why are you asking me?
Because that's how the show ends.
How would I know?
You say something from the game. you ask me. I'll do it.
Gary, what are we playing today? What are we talking about today? Like,
oh boy. Go to hell.
Fireballs.
Fireballs.
There's fireballs in this sometimes. Firemind.
That's what I was actually looking for, was Firemind.
Oh shit. Great.
Yeah. I really thought you were gonna do that. And if you asked me, I was gonna say that. Bye.